How's this? Everybody hear me? Good, good, good. I want to thank Joan and Jimmy. Beautiful series. I've been to a lot of the events this summer and just been amazed at the quality of the work. Such a rich literary landscape here. Ava and I moved here in 1987 specifically to be part of the poetry community here. And our first poetry reading was right here. Pat Dobler brought us. Patricia Dobler, many of you knew her. And it's especially a privilege to be reading with Robert Gibb, as Joan said, arguably the best poet in America, right here from Homestead, writing about our landscape here. And Joan Bauer, who's not only a wonderful poet, but also a great community organizer and activist and a... And probably the sweetest person I know. So, yeah. So, thank you. Thank you for all you do. Thank you. Speaking of Patricia Dobler, I'd like to read a poem of hers. As a matter of fact, I'd like to share four poems by Autumn House authors. First one by Pat Dobler. Didn't Patricia Dobler found this series, or she was one of the founders? Her husband Bruce did. Okay. I was confused because she brought us here at that time. This is a poem of hers called An Afterlife. And you may know that Pat died about 8 years ago, I think, 8 or 10 years ago. And... So wherever she is, I think of her in this poem, An Afterlife. I climbed to the third floor. I climbed and could still breathe the thin, bright air. Last year, I thought I never would again climb and breathe. The attic door opened a crack to a table set for me, a silver spoon and a fork. A vase with white roses, bowls filled with food, all of it smelling delicious, borscht, sprinkled with dill, salmon in a kind of sauce, a bright red vegetable. I couldn't name, for I was on a porch somewhere in Russia, somewhere in the country. Long shadows fell on the white table. I thought it must be a white night. The vines were heavy. The porch's lattice work was covered with rooster, horse, man. The one chair, pulled away from the table, was ready to hold me. I love that poem. I love that poem. Another poet I love is Ada Limón. Ada is originally from California. She lived in New York for a long time. She was Martha Stewart's right arm. She was Martha's advance person. She'd go into a city, get everything set up for Martha. Martha would fly in and do her shtick, and Ada would be at the next city. But Ada fell in love and moved to Kentucky, so that's where she lives now. This is a poem of hers called Selecting Things for Vagueness. And this is it's a woman speaking to her lover. Selecting things for vagueness. I want to know some things for certain and other things for vague. Have some vague idea of where you are, not an address. No train stop, no telephone, no relative, no neighbor, no local, no highway, blah, blah, blah. No turnpike, no regional, no county, no watershed, no school district, no supermarket, no tributary, no mailbox, no corner, no state land, no as the crow flies. Because what I do when I find you, well, mister, this I know for certain. I hope she doesn't catch him. Another poet I love is Nancy Pagg. We published her book called No Sweeter Fat. And she lives in the Pacific Northwest, and nobody writes about that landscape better than Nancy Pagg. A poem called "I Believe I Could Kneel." I believe I could kneel in so many quiet places where the pale sponge of moss would surely reach above my hips as I sink down and down as the deer must in their beds, kneeling once, then once again, to lower themselves front and back before closing their glistening eyes. I think I'm the kind of person, down on one knee and shifting my weight my whole life long, but capable of sinking far and deep to the bottom of something that might replace the religion I discarded or make me really live in this body or waste my life. I would like to live my way into being someone who stands back up and runs toward that holy forest. Lovely poem, isn't it? Great landscape there. One more poem before I move on to my own work. Short poem by Ruth L. Schwartz. Great poet, lives in Oakland, California, has won the National Poetry Series. She was the second winner of our poetry series about 10 years ago. We recently published another book of hers. This is a poem called Perseid, you know, the August meteor shower. While they're here, I hold them like my breath. They deepen the sky like blood in my body. I'm glad to offer my body like this, a small craft over fields of water, where light can fall, be lost, be caught, be held. I'm naked in my chair, facing the window. If I were outside, I'd want to look up and see someone naked in every window. I think we need the difficult river. We need the absence of tenderness so love can come like shooting stars, if it comes. Isn't that beautiful? A brief advertisement. If you'd like this book, it's on sale today for $10, usually $35. Also, collections by those four poets are on sale there, so I recommend them. I want to share half a dozen of my own poems. Half a dozen of my own summertime poems. These are all poems that try to capture the spirit of summer. We shouldn't feel oppressed by this heat. We should glory in it. Let it purify us, right? Nah, you're not buying that, are you? Nah. I'm going to do these in chronological order, starting when I was young, doing half a dozen, bringing you up to today, and then ending with a limerick, which is fairly new. I wrote this poem when I was 25. Evening in the Adirondacks. Always it will be late summer in your mind. Birches give off a full and dark light with a motion you know will abide and return every evening. You are changed by small things. An elm seed spins to earth, and like your talent for the cello, the possibilities remain enclosed. Being ordinary makes you a hero. Sweeping the porch, looking at the sky, you become more than yourself. The solace for being dull is being perfectly at ease with the world. All afternoon, the afternoon sails in and out the window, and the first star starts the lake singing. If you save up that applause later, it'll really add up to something. Yeah. There you go. This is a poem I wrote when I was 27, and it's about the disappointment of love. What else does 27-year-old guy write about, right? It's called The Ceremony. We want to be surprised out of propriety without knowing how or why. We never rise so high as when we don't know where we're going. We exchange a glance with a passing stranger. We enter a doorway and the soul travels outward like a pebble thrown into a pond, enlarging its circles to include the familiar. We walk along the shore in the feverish moonlight, every shadow part of the ceremony, each thing exactly itself until its secret is released. Love refashions the world, nourishes our deciduous charms. A whirling bubble teaches us the mechanics of stars, and the feel of the south wind guides us into the painful kingdom of hope, where music speaks of what we desire and shall never have. Very young poem, huh? I wouldn't write anything like that now, but I like the language. I think it's pretty language. Let's move forward 14 years. When I was 39, my daughter was born, and I taught her how to swim in the neighborhood pool up in Mount Washington. And we also were part of the Waldorf School. We have a Waldorf contingent here tonight. Welcome. And my son and daughter went there. It was a wonderful place for children. And there was a teacher there named James Warren. And he came to visit us. He was my son's teacher. And this poem is called Munja Munja. It's for James Warren. Zucchini, tomato, flash beneath the big knife. Chopped onion sizzles. The table is set. A feast for five. Ava's quick fingers pause before the obelisk of eggplant. Genuflect before the spice rack. Enter the cathedral of the green pepper. Can truly everything be good? Clinging to us like bean stalks, the children grow toward God. Our garden is always in bloom. Today, Nicholas's teacher sits at our table, hands folded, black curls wild like an angel's. Three-year-old Leah anoints herself, prays. Thanks for food and flowers. I hate mushrooms, and I can't help it. Ghosts of steam rise from the pot. The bread is broken and blessed again by each mouthful. As I said, about the same time I taught my daughter Leah to swim in our neighborhood pool. This poem is called The Summer You Learn to Swim, for Leah. The summer you learned to swim was the summer I learned to be at peace with myself. In May, you were afraid to put your face in the water, but by August, I was standing in the pool once more when you dove in, then retreated to the wall, saying, "You forgot to say sugar." So I said, "Come on, sugar, you can do it." And you pushed off and swam to me and held on, laughing, your hair stuck to your cheeks. You hiccuped with joy and swam off again. And I dove in too, trying new things. I tried not giving advice. I tried waking early to pray. I tried not rising in anger. Watching you, I grew stronger. Your courage washed away my fear. All day I worked hard thinking of you. In the evening I walked the long hill home. You were at the top, waving your small arms, pittering down the slope to me, and I lifted you high, so high to the moon. That summer, all the world was soul and water, light glancing off peaks. You learned the turtle, the cannonball, the froggy, and the flutter, and I learned to stand and wait for you to swim to me. A few years after that, Ava, who's a writer, among other things, said to me, I don't remember what the context was, you have to write every day because you never know where a poem sleeps. And that line stuck with me. And after a number of drafts, this poem came. It's called Where the Poem Sleeps. You have to write every day because you never know where a poem sleeps. It might be coiled around a branch, high in the air, dozing in the speckled shade. It might be dreaming in a story you loved when you were a mouse in a wall much larger than now. You may find a poem in a cloud a boy watches, thinking of the one time he went fishing with a bear. But you have to let it happen. You have to listen real hard. The poem can survive a night in the woods alone, curled up under an elm tree after a day of looking for you. It can even be happy as a stone in the river if it knows you are waiting for it to come home. And you are waiting as darkness descends and the birds become invisible on the branches, their nests like the thoughts of drowsy mathematicians. I've been an English teacher for a long time, mostly undergraduates, and I love teaching. But the older I get, the further distance there is between me and the students. You know the feeling, right? This is a true story. I just wrote it down and it came out as a poem. Could have been a short story, but it's called The Food of Love. You may know the phrase from Shakespeare, if music be the food of love, play on. Isn't that, what is that, As You Like It, I think? The Food of Love, a true story. At 2 o'clock in the morning, the security guards were called to the dormitory. Trevor was standing under his lady's window, again, serenading with his chosen instrument, the bagpipe. And lights were coming on and people were yelling obscenities and calling the police. Not a single co-ed was leaning on her arms mooning, envious of the young lady hiding under her sheets in her room, wishing she'd never smiled at him. If music is the food of love, then bagpipes must be the Limburger cheese of the heart. I think of Goethe at the age of 84, falling in love with a girl of 17. Her father tried to have the greatest man of the Romantic era arrested. Her brothers wanted to cut off his balls. Love, my friends, makes fools of us all. I don't know what became of Trevor, the bagpipe poet of Irving, Texas, but I like to think that his lady developed an appreciation for his persistent, inappropriate passion, and his nightly squawks and bleats, sounding for all the world like a duck in love with a beautiful mare, stirred her. And when the guards escorted Trevor back to his room, his bagpipes drooping forlornly behind, she picked up the phone to call him. Wishful thinking. Two more poems. A little love poem here. This is my bagpipes. a limerick. Ava is a bird watcher. You're probably familiar with Peterson's field guides, lists of birds and other things, but classics and beautiful books. Peterson's. You, lovely in lamplight, reading your Peterson's field guide. Me, half in shadow, speaking to people who died years ago. And you are chuckling over the names of birds. The male Dick Sissel, with his black spot on a yellow chest. The plain Chachalaka, with its rollicking call. And let us not forget the long-necked, black-bellied, whistling duck with its pink legs. And the banana squat, the red-footed booby, the chaffinch, the great-crested flycatcher, the limpkin, the linnet, and the long spur. Come along, my scarlet tanager, my cinnamon teal. Let's go to bed. Going to finish with a limerick. This is by a fellow named Arnie Schnagel, who's a volunteer for the Obama campaign. And he wrote it to inspire his fellow volunteers. There was a man named Osama who got shot in his pajamas. Truth to tell, unless you're Michelle, you don't fuck with Obama. Thank you.